This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome into First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars reward destination. That coffee at least starting to hit for me, Jeff.
I don't know, that intro feels like you gave a lot more effort on your name than I did on my name. Yeah,
like coming out the tunnel, high-fiving everybody.
Yeah, like you're Jordan, I'm Pippen here, but that's
just
fine.
As important a key role player, obviously.
Sure, I don't think they're winning those titles. Anyway, that's neither here nor there.
We're here for a preseason finale, game number 3 for the Black and Gold and for the Tennessee Titans, who will wrap things up here today in the Caesars Superdome. Obviously, everyone's happy for the end of preseason play as we get a week off next week in NFL action, at least, that mini bye week before action starts for the Black and Gold. Week 1 against the Carolina Panthers, and I don't know if you saw any of the highlights. Bryce Young having a pretty solid showing his final outing.
Are they highlights? I don't call it preseason highlight. I just call it preseason stuff. Like, it's not – anyway, but no, he had a touchdown pass, which, you know, hopefully that's the last one he throws for a few weeks. Because I don't
get a little confidence so he can just be dashed when he comes here.
Bryce is in an interesting situation, and I always feel like we go into year 2 with a number 1 overall pick, and everyone's decided, like, oh, Bryce isn't good. And it's like, how do you know that? How have you decided that already? You know, and it's strange because we were talking about Anthony Richardson in the break, and it's like everyone seems to have decided that Anthony Richardson is the answer.
He's like the next Mahomes.
It's just strange to me how quickly we come to these determinations of, like, yeah, the Panthers were hot garbage last year at every position. Like, why would you expect a quarterback to star in that scenario? And C.J. Stroud, I think, was in a much better position to succeed. And that's why, like, sometimes you talk about, oh, well, you know, well, we picked this guy number 1, like, and C.J. goes number 2. C.J., while he probably, you know, the cachet of going number 1, the excitement of going number 1 is probably something he would have wanted, he ended up in a way better position than Bryce did. And we never talk about that. We never talk about the situation you're going to, as opposed to, like, well, he was always an undersized quarterback, and now we're seeing that. And it's – I don't know if that's why you watch him out there and he looks like a child playing among men. But that was always going to be the case. He's tiny. That's – but, like, Kyler was the same way. Kyler won Rookie of the Year, and everyone decided Kyler's the answer. And now he has this massive contract. He hasn't done anything since. So we'll see with Bryce. I'm hopeful for Bryce.
I appreciated Cam Jordan's comments when he got interviewed by Kay Adams, saying, little Bryce.
Little Bryce. He's little. He's a little guy.
Looking at our Oakland Heart Jewelers talking text line, talking about some quarterback situation from 0463, we got Jeff. Good morning, guys. Love the early show. Michael from South Lafourche. What's y'all's opinion on the backup quarterback situation? I personally love Rattler.
Yeah, a lot of people love Rattler. There's a Rattler hive going on. You know, rattlesnake.
We've kind of talked about that. There's something about the guy's aura that people are latching onto.
I've gotten better at my Rattler sound effect. No, it's a rattle. It's good. There it is. But... yeah, you know, Rattler, you know, he's got great arm talent. And I think people get caught up in the arm talent, and they, especially when coming out of college, because there's just, like, arm talent at the college level is so important. You know, I would say, like, the way I always phrase it, like, at the college level, arm talent is like 60% of the equation. Everything's simpler. The defenses are simpler. The concepts you're running are simpler. You're asked to do a lot less. You're operating out of the shotgun almost exclusively. And then you get to the NFL, and it becomes everyone's got arm talent. Now, some people have a little better arm talent. Like, you talk about a Josh Allen, like, his arm talent is elite, but that's not alone going to get you where you need to go. That becomes like 20-25% of the equation in the NFL, and it's a lot
accuracy.
More about accuracy, but I put that with arm talent, right? It becomes more about where to go with the ball. understanding what the defense is doing. Everything's faster. You got to get stuff there on time. You got to get the ball out on time. Your footwork has to be on point.
Right.
You have to understand how to navigate the pocket, how to extend plays, when to extend plays, when to scramble. And one of the things that's bugged me with Rattler, and it's a criticism, but it's a young player criticism, is you get happy feet. And I've seen him a little bit too much. And you saw it in the 49ers game. That fumble, I think, was a product of he didn't trust the pocket around him. He tried to scramble. The scramble got cut off, and then he kind of got lost, and the ball got knocked out. And, you know, you look at the protection. The protection wasn't good. But that's just something, I think, that a young player has to learn, has to pick up. And that's why when I look at this scenario and you see a second-year player who looks a little bit more comfortable, who you're looking at and saying, if I had to pick one of these guys to be my backup, to go in, and I keep using this example, but it's the perfect example. You have a 17-0 lead, and you got to play the second half of this game. Which guy do I look at and say he has the better chance of going out and winning that game? Because that's important. That's the difference between
Flashback
the Saints.
Flashback last year to the Green Bay game,
I guess. Yeah, that's the reference, right? You go in, if you go and win that game, you're in the playoffs. You win 10 games. You host the Eagles. You probably win. You're talking about a team that might be in the divisional round of the playoffs versus a team that's saying, can we get back to the playoffs for after 3 years out? Like, that's the difference. And so that's what you look at for the backup quarterback. You're not talking about who has the best chance to develop into a starter down the road. And I'd say it's Rattler, if that was the question. The question is, who do I trust more to go into a game and win it.
In an emergency situation, right.
Like, I always go back to Trevor Siemian. Like, Trevor Siemian is the most effective backup quarterback in terms of actually coming in and winning a game in relief that the Saints have had in a long time. Because he did it twice in that year. He beat the Bucs in that game Jameis went down. He beat the Falcons in Week 18 in the game Taysom Hill started and went down in. And at the time, that got you to 9-8.
Trevor Siemian, the closer.
Yeah, and you thought, well, yeah, but, like, that's what you're looking at as a backup quarterback. Now, who is the better starter?
Gotcha.
That's a different question. The games he started, they lost. But you don't pick your backup quarterback based on, oh, if they have to start a game, will we win? Because I wouldn't be surprised if you say, hey, Jake Haener's our backup quarterback, and then if you get into a scenario where you have to start a guy, it becomes a different conversation. But so right now, when I look at Jake, I see a guy who's a little bit more confident, who seems to trust the offense a little bit more. And if I have to throw somebody into a very high-pressure scenario, I would prefer it to be him, and we'll see today. I think
that's going to be all about the Spencer Rattler, Jake Haener show today.
Yeah, and like last year in the finale, he threw like what 2-3 interceptions. He was spamming Lucas Kroll the ball, and they eventually figured it out and they started picking it off.
Kroll's in Denver now.
He was in Denver. I'm not sure if he's still there.
Yeah, but
that
you.
Is where he went with Sean Payton. So that's where I'm at right now, and you know, Spencer has had really really nice moments. Like if I had to pick like the top 10 throws of camp in terms of just like beautiful ball, beautiful touch, beautiful location, he'd probably have 6 of them, right? But it's not all about that. It's about processing. It's about, you know, being ready right now. And I don't think there's any shame in being able to say, hey, he's not ready to start at the NFL level right now. He's not the guy that you would have the backup at,
and as wasn't expected to ever.
Well, I mean, I think that you do have high expectations for him, and
sure,
you feel like, you know, talking about a guy you drafted in the 5th round and being able to say at this point, still, hey, I could see him being a starter at the NFL level. I never said that about Ian Book, right? You know, I don't think anyone ever said that about Garrett Grayson,
right?
Guys like that.
Definitely
so
not.
Even by those standards, I think he's ahead of the curve. And I think if you're the Saints, you have the luxury of actually having a dude in his second year who, you know, I don't want to throw a rookie in there and have him completely torpedo any confidence he's been able to gain, because he's behind a struggling offensive line. He's in an offense that I wouldn't say is loaded with playmakers. Now, with Jake, I'm not saying you throw him to the wolves, but I feel better about him being able to navigate that. So that's where I'm at in the backup conversation.
To me, I think a lot of folks are getting way too hyped, though, over they consider Spencer Rattler this more mobile option.
He is the more mobile option.
Over Haener, I think they're both kind of... They are mobile, but no one's really looking to tuck and run it.
Yeah, I'd say Jake's mobility is more along the lines of Derek's mobility, in that, like, I think they're not unathletic people, but they're not looking to run.
Right.
I think with Spencer, you see a little bit more of the, hey, I can actually get out and run the ball and pick up positive yardage. You saw it against the Cardinals.
On the touchdown, right.
Yeah, so, like, I don't think Jake or Derek is scoring a touchdown in that scenario, to put it that way. So, you know, in that sense, yes, he can generate a little bit more with his legs, but I sometimes wonder if it's the best option in some of the scenarios that he's running. And anytime I see a quarterback scrambling in training camp at a high level, I look at that as a negative, because I want to see in camp, I want to see you go through your progressions, I want to see you work through the offense. And scrambling in a practice where they can't hit you just feels cheap, in my opinion. And I don't know. I've always felt that way. I felt that way when Taysom was competing for the job. And it's like, yeah, Taysom in a game would run here. But I know he can run. I don't need you to prove to me you can run. I need you to prove to me that you can run the offense. And I think there's a difference there.
Looking at, too, this quarterback situation, is there any instance, probably not today, but obviously during the season, where Taysom Hill gets some snaps, and not just in those gadgety packages.
Taysom. I love me some Taysom. Happy birthday, by the way.
Today?
It was on Friday. Oh, okay. They sang him happy birthday on the field at the end of practice. Taysom, we've seen a good number of quarterback reps from him in camp. They've mostly been runs. And a few of them have been in the red zone, which I found interesting, because I would think that you would, if you're going to try to fool somebody with a Taysom QB rep, it wouldn't be in the red zone when they're already giving you their heavy personnel anyway. But
I guess it's kind of like the tush-push. Go ahead and stop it. We dare you.
Yeah, I think we've gone back to early Taysom to some extent, like 2017 Taysom, where if he's throwing a pass, it's going to be a complete misdirection. Like, you're trying to catch him in a heavy look, as opposed to the last couple of years where it's been a little bit more, you know, designed. The question for me is with Taysom, and we've seen it this year more than any other year, does he wear two gloves or does he wear one glove? Because there's been times that I've seen him drop balls that I'm just like, if he was wearing two gloves, I think he catches that, you know? And but I don't think he likes to throw with a glove on. So does it become a tell if you're saying, he's going to
see him?
Yeah, well, if he goes out there with one glove, wouldn't you be like, hey, this is he's going to throw.
It's a passing play,
you
right?
You know, so we're going to be alert for the throw. And I've never seen him necessarily working on throwing with a glove on. So I don't know. It's a stupid thing, but it's also like, if you're going to have him throw passes and you have him run out there with two gloves, wouldn't that be a tell that he can't – that he's going to not throw because he has two – anyway, I don't know how they're going to work that in. But he's going to get – a lot of action, and I think he's going to get used at the quarterback spot, just maybe not as extensively as we've seen in the past. I think he's going to get more handoffs this year than we've ever seen.
Yeah, we've been basically seeing a lot of that fullback position out of Taysom.
Yeah, tosses, handoffs, motion where he gets the ball. Like, you're going to get him the ball. I just think it's going to look a little different this year than maybe that kind of straightforward QB power. And they're still going to run QB power, but I just don't think you're going to see it nearly as often.
When we get back from the break, we're going to get into some of our sound from tight end Foster Moreau. I figure we might see a few snaps from him in this game. Question, though, as we head to break, Jeff, what about Juwan Johnson? I know we talked about it a little bit before we went on air, but will we see him get some reps as he's returning back from injury? Is there kind of still too soon to get him into game action?
Juwan?
Yeah.
I would be surprised, but I wouldn't hate it. You know, I think he's ready to get out there and maybe get a couple plays in. But if we do see him, it will be not a lot.
Going to take a break. When we get back from First Take, we'll get into that sound of Foster Moreau, the tight end. We're here on the Harrah's New Orleans Caesars Rewards Destination First Take Show. Be back right after this on WWL.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Back here on First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. We are in the Caesars Superdome right now, getting ready for the countdown to kickoff. Coming up with the Cajun Cannon, you can see us at Gate B in the atrium level. Make sure you stop by, say hey. We had a little difficulty finding our spot this morning, but we made it.
We just need to move on, Steve. We're here now.
I know, I can't get over it because I was making fun of Bobby, who needs help getting to our area, and I was like, I ended up, we like did like a whole loop around
the
dome.
You say help, it's not like he gets, like he just needs someone to lead him.
Yeah, he puts their hand on his shoulder.
He walks here under his own power. Yeah, he doesn't like need to get blindfolded. But he'll get here. He'll get here just like we got here.
Getting to our sound now for this hour. Tight end Foster Moreau recently spoke to the Saints media, and you really found out he was dealing with a pretty serious ankle injury going into the season last year.
Yeah, that's what he talked about.
Especially, you know, printed ankle brace.
Yeah, like a 3D printed ankle brace. And, you know, it's funny. Sometimes we just, you know, we don't even talk about it. Like, yeah, but he was dealing with an ankle injury, and I think most people kind of assumed, well, it just got better. and he's playing now because he's healthy. And it's like, no, he just found a way to play through it, right? Like he said, a lot of times people wouldn't play through that ankle injury, but they got creative and it wasn't even necessarily a brace so much as it was kind of like an insert that they would put in there, and they would like tape it up really tight. And it was just a way to get it so like the tendon wouldn't like kind of snap over into a spot it wasn't supposed to be. Like, really, that's what he was dealing with. So, you know, if you watched him last year and you were like, man, he doesn't look as mobile as I remember, it's probably because he wasn't, because he was dealing with that. And, you know, it's just funny because you don't necessarily find out about that stuff until long down the road, and he had a surgery in January to fix it. And now he's kind of back where he wants to be. But, yeah, assume when you're watching a game in like week 12, like 80% of the roster is dealing with something that they have to manage throughout the week.
A guy from, you know, attended Jesuit, then goes to LSU, and now his career has brought him here to the New Orleans Saints. So definitely a guy that fans are a favorite of. Morrow talked about balancing the concern of personal health with his desire to play for his teammates.
Everyone has a different answer, right? For me, this game's given me everything I've ever had. And I have to repay it in any possible way that I can. And, you know, even when I was back in Vegas with the Raiders, you know, I'd consider it, there's anywhere from 55 to 70,000 people are going to come and pay to watch you play football on a daily basis. And that's nothing that I ever could have dreamed of when I was 12 years old. You know, you go back to the old XFL, the XFL quarterback, I forget his name, but asking himself two questions like, all right, question one, do I have a pulse? Yes. Question two, am I alive and active on game day? Yes. Okay, so let's go play football. It's not necessarily to that demeanor, but if I'm healthy, I'm playing. And if I could run, I'll play.
Yeah, Foster Morrow there, basically a guy that loves the game of football, appreciates where he's gotten to in the game, and all those opportunities, you know, that you're on a time clock, obviously, in the league, and he wants to make the best of it. You totally appreciate having a dude like that around.
Yeah, so the guy he's quoting is Jeff Brohm, who is actually, you know, he was head coach at Purdue, and now he's a head coach at Louisville.
Right.
And that was from, the old XFL, the he hate me XFL days, which that was a wild time. But, no, and I think that's, you know, when, and one of the other questions he was asked, if that ever creates friction, he said, like, everyone has their own answer. And, okay, what if that answer, someone else's answer doesn't match up with your answer of, like, exactly how much should you play through?
Yeah.
And what's reasonable to play through? And he said, you know, it doesn't necessarily cause friction in the locker room. Like, because everyone appreciates, like, everyone's working hard, everyone's doing what they can. But I do think to some extent there is a level of expectation of, hey, yeah, you're hurt, but everyone's dealing with stuff.
Something.
He mentioned, like, there's going to be several players out on the field today. You know, a guy like Mason Tipton, I wonder if he's going to be out there. He's been dealing with a hamstring injury.
I'd sure like to see him.
It's tough to put him on the roster without him appearing in a preseason game. And he's a guy who was, shining early in camp. And at that point, I think I did have him on one of my early projections. Then he wasn't able to go against the Cardinals. He wasn't able to go against the 49ers. And if he doesn't get out there today, I don't know if you really can make that decision. And he might end up on the practice squad if you can't show anything. And so, you know, is he going to try to play through something? We'll see. But, you know, I think there's going to be several players out there today dealing with something. But the putting good tape out is more important to them than being comfortable. And that's something that's not everyone deals with the same way.
Obviously, Morrow playing with Carr in those Raiders days, he has a lot of familiarity with the quarterback, good relationship with him. One of the things he was asked to was about Derek Carr, year two in New Orleans, and also the fan sentiment.
I mean, it's complicated, right? It's complicated. And I've been just about everywhere as a Saints fan through my entire life, right? From as early as I can remember, it was Aaron Brooks, but, you know, as late as I can remember, obviously, it was Drew. And it's hard because there's an extremely high level of expectation, so accountability has to be up. And I do believe this year that our accountability is up. So it'll be interesting to see how we respond. But I think Derek looks great. I think he's had a great camp. I think most all of my teammates would echo that sentiment, and I'm excited to watch us work.
Foster Morrow talking about Derek Carr year two here in New Orleans. And, yeah, I know Bobby Hebert always says you never want to be the man replacing the man. And I guess lucky for Carr, he kind of comes in after Jameis Winston, really. But for some reason, the Saints Nation has this love affair with him.
No, I don't think he's – I think he's still in that
– the shadow of
Brees. You never really got a full season out of Jameis to say he was the guy that got held up to Drew. And even Andy, like, he was kind of a halfway season. He was never installed as
– the guy.
If we got through the entirety of the 2021 season and Jameis started all 17 games and you had a you could say, like, this was a full dose of Jameis – then I think that we might be able to say that he kind of took that, you know, that bullet for the next quarterback,
yeah,
who isn't going to be compared to Drew. He's going to be compared to Jameis. We didn't get that. We never got that with Jameis in 2021. We never got that with him in 2022 because we got a lot of Andy Dalton. So it really became, okay, the first guy you really brought in as the guy, right? Because Jameis was here in advance. He was studying behind Drew, and you thought, hey, maybe he can take over. And so, no, I think Derek is that guy. And that's a big part of why his first year was looked at so critically. And he did struggle at points. But he also was really, really good at points, especially toward the end of the season. But it does feel like he has not won over a lot of people yet. And you got to win. Like, that's at the end of the day, you got to go out there and win. You got to go to the playoffs. You got to prove that it's not just another season of, okay, we're just going to kind of float in the middle of the pack and not ever really be excited about anything. You got to do something. You got to string wins together. You got to have a calling card moment. And if he can do that, I think he'll win some people over. But until you can do that, it's going to be the same. You're going to kind of get that, you know, it's not confidence. It's like the confidence in the opposite direction. It's confidence that things won't go well. That even if you start 2-0, they started 2-0 last year. Like, that should be like,
you would never guess that. Right?
I mean, like, they never do that. You know, like, this is a team that almost always has a bad loss in the first 2 to 3 games. So even during the peak Sean Payton years, you almost always had that bad loss. I think back to Ryan Fitzpatrick in Tampa, right? Like, L.A. In week 2 when Brees got hurt, they still, right, you know, won a bunch of games, went to the playoffs that year. And so you had confidence, even after those slow starts, that they could turn things around and get to the postseason. It's the opposite now, where you could get out to a 3-0 start, and you're still kind of looking over your shoulder, waiting for the other shoe to drop. And until you can prove that that's not going to happen every year, you're going to get a lot of hesitancy to commit fully to that situation. So it's, at the end of the day, you got to win. And that's where I think Derek is right now.
We always hear guys talking about accountability.
Yeah.
Accountability, a big factor, obviously, when it comes to team play, in the locker room, on the field. And it seems that Moro might have one of the bigger voices on the team when it comes to that. He was asked, are you this team's accountability enforcer?
I think I'm just the loudest, I'll be honest. That's what DA would tell me. But I don't know. There's plenty of guys who shed tons of accountability on people. I just have a little bit of knowledge, and it'd be I'd be remiss if I didn't try to share it, because I love these guys and I care a lot about these guys, and I want us to be great, and I want us to win a lot of games. And it doesn't happen if someone isn't holding someone accountable. So if it's me, it's me sometimes, right? And I don't really like being that guy, because I love everyone, but sometimes you get a little red ass.
Sometimes you get a little red ass, Jeff.
I've never heard
that happens
that
on the air,
is that a saying? I don't know if I've ever heard
that.
Yeah,
a little error.
Yeah, but hey.
One thing I noticed when Moro showed up, it was like even in the locker room right away, I felt like his presence was there, his personality, very loud, boisterous, was making even messing with the lights, turning on and off. It was just surprising for someone that had just arrived to the team.
He's a character.
Yes,
there's
for sure.
Question. There's no question. But I think there's a difference between being a character and being a leader. And I'm not saying Foster's not a leader, but I do think that the Saints – team, the Saints roster, one of, you know, if you're looking for reasons to say, okay, why should we be confident despite, you know, all the national pundits saying, oh, there's not enough talent, there's whatever. And it's, you know, one big thing they have in their corner is basically in every room, on this team and every position group, you have a really strong leadership type player, right? In the defensive end group, you have Cam Jordan. In the linebacker room, you have DeMario Davis. In the safety room, you have Tyrann Mathieu.
It's pretty unbelievable, those three right there.
In the running back room, you have Alvin Kamara. You know, in the tight end room, you have Taysom Hill. I kind of still look at him as a tight end, but and Foster, who I do think is a good accountability type guy, right? And so, you know, I think that benefits
McCoy's
you as a team.
Kind of turned that dude on the offensive line
group. You have Eric McCoy, who I think is really taking a step forward. You know, I think that's the type of thing that when you could look at if you look at a Madden roster and you see like, wow, why are the Saints rated lower than I feel like they should be? They feel like they are going to win more games than maybe that number would indicate. It's because when you have leadership like that, it helps you, you know, the sum of your parts, right? It helps you outperform what might on paper not look like the best roster in the NFL, right? So I think that's what you're hoping is the case, and the accountability is a part of that. You know, that's why you go to Irvine. Now, part of that's getting out of the heat, but part of that is kind of the bonding, that the team chemistry that you're able to generate by kind of sending everyone off on their own, putting them in hotel rooms, giving them nothing really to do but to be together and work on stuff and like become closer as a team. And, you know, that's something that has to manifest on game day. And if it does, hey, maybe you can win a couple games that otherwise might have gone the other way because you're able to find that extra gear. You know, but sometimes that's, you know, you could say that. It's really easy to say that.
Yeah.
And it's a lot harder to actually put that into practice.
I know that you weren't out with the team for the West Virginia days, but I got to imagine being sequestered out in L.A. is a lot better than West Virginia.
I have no frame of reference. I imagine it is. I mean, the weather is probably similar. I don't know what it probably rained a little bit more in West Virginia than it did in California.
We got a few rain days, but yeah. It was waking up in the morning, very cool, comfortable temperatures.
Yeah. I mean, I'm sure there's a lot more to do, generally speaking,
exactly,
than there would have been
right.
in West Virginia.
Maybe more to get in trouble with, too.
Probably ate fewer Subway sandwiches than you did. But, you know, it is what it is. And, you know, hopefully that manifests into something. Now, do they do that again if it worked? That's a question. But I think that's a happy problem to have if it ends up being because you won 11, 12 games and went to the playoffs.
I think we've heard from a ton of people, though, that the plan is going forward to be back in Metairie for next season's training camp, not to be in a destination.
Yeah, I mean, they're not going to just go to California just to go to California. They also, next year, you're going to have one road preseason game and two home preseason games.
Right.
Whereas this year you had two road preseason games. So that
allowed
you.
Made a little sense there.
So, I think a scenario where, hey, we have the first preseason game on the road. Maybe they give you L.A., the Rams or the Chargers, and maybe you start camp out there.
Yeah.
And then you finish camp here, kind of like they did this year, but with an extra, like instead of staying out there for that second week, you come back after the road game. After, you know, the Cardinals game, you would have come home.
Yeah.
I think that's a scenario that might make sense because you're taking advantage of the facility, your own facility, a lot more than maybe you did this year. I don't think you're going to – you know, 28 days, that's too long, I think, for any team. That's just – I think it wears on you after a while, and that last week felt like, you know, from my perspective, and I'm
yeah.
sure the players felt like – Jamal Williams definitely felt that way. it drags on a little bit because you feel like you got the work that you needed to get done, and now it's like, okay, let's get ready for the season. But, you know, if they lose 10 games, then no way they're doing it again.
That all-important thing, winning, the importance of winning. Mora was asked, how important is a successful season this year for the team and for head coach Dennis Allen?
Obviously, there is a lot of noise. And again, back to expectations. We're a good football team with a good roster, with experienced players, and we need to make the playoffs and we need to make a push in the playoffs, right? So good enough is never really truly good enough. So you could have a winning season all you want. You could have all these accolades and all these stats and all these Pro Bowlers, but there's one winner in this league, and then there's a whole lot of losers, right? And you could do that as long as you want. But for us, we're trying to win. We're trying to win now. That is apparent and obvious to everyone.
Yeah, and what do you know? The good old Super Bowl right here in New Orleans this year. I don't think anybody has this team even penciled in as a contender for it. But the guys in the locker room don't want to hear any of that or believe that. They have Super Bowl aspirations, obviously.
I think the guys in the locker room have them penciled in for that.
Yeah.
I don't know how you go into a season and not at least believe, hey, we are going to do this.
We got a chance.
Right, and because if you go in already defeated, then what's the point of playing the games at all? But no, I mean, here's the thing. When it comes to the NFL, everyone likes to pretend they have all the answers, and like I can look at this roster and know exactly how many games they're going to win. And you know, Jeff Duncan from NOAA.com, he always does a survey before the season every year. And my issue of like when I answer that question is I have to balance how many games do I think they can win,
right? The optimism,
and how many games do I think they will win, right? Because I think that's a very significant difference of like. If everything goes right, I think this team can win double-digit games. I think they can get to the playoffs. Now, what happens if you have injuries at key positions? What if the timing of your season creates a few schedule losses where, we would have won this game if it was on a Sunday, but we played it on a Thursday, and this person wasn't able to get back in time? And that sort of thing, like, oh, there was a fumble at the goal line of this, like the Falcons game last year, right? If Taysom Hill doesn't get that ball punched out at the goal line, do they win it? Probably, right? So it all comes down to these really tiny moments and swings of momentum that you just can't predict in advance. And so much of it is luck. So much of it is guessing. Do the Saints win a Super Bowl if Brett Favre doesn't throw the ball back across the field right into Tracy Porter's arms? I don't know, but that's not something the Saints could have controlled. They benefited from it. So there is such an element of randomness. And can this team get to the Super Bowl? Yeah, it's tough. I wouldn't bet on it, but can it happen? Sure. Now, you got to get to the playoffs first. And I think that's the first step. Once you get there, anything can happen. I watched the Giants win two Super Bowls on the strength of a pass rush and Eli Manning blacking out and having the games of his life, right? Like, can this team do that? I don't know. But they are built similarly to those Giants teams. I'll put it that way.
We are inside the dome, folks. Gate B, Loge level set up here, getting ready for the countdown, the kickoff coming up at 11 o'clock with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert, presented by Craig's Electrical Generator Service. Great spot inside the atrium. Come see us for show before you make your way to the seats. We're going to take a break. Be back with more First Take brought to you by the Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination, right after this on WWL. We are back here on First Take brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. And what do you know, Jeff? We are also stationed here on Gate B in the atrium.
A lot of
Caesars Rewards Lounge.
A lot of Caesars. It's a Caesars building, and they make you aware of it.
Looking at our Oakland Hard Jewelers talking text line, Jeff Zian from 1413 morning. I've been following the Saints since 1967. Good and bad, I have the Saints this year at 7 wins and 10 losses. The reason for this is because of penalties. Until the upper management of the Saints stop and do something about penalties, they'll never make the playoffs. I see 4 games they should have won to get them to 11-6 season, but they'll end up a 7-10 season. Joe from Biloxi. Well, I don't know if upper management's penalties. In charge of the penalties.
Yeah, that's a tough one to put on management. Yeah, because like, how do you
coaching?
You
know, sure.
Yeah, coach. Yeah, we could put that on the coaching all day. I'm just not sure what the upper management can do about penalties. But I mean, penalties are an issue, right? That was one thing that the offensive line. Foster Moreau excluded, which he had a really funny quote that we can't play without some editing.
What's funny is, when we got to that audio, I'm like, do I have that clip and did I put the bleep in?
Yeah, right. I'm afraid to play it just in case this is the one I forgot to bleep.
Yes.
But, he had a funny clip because, that 95-yard touchdown drive, it was really valuable for this offense, but it was especially for him because he's the one who jumped off sides on the first play of the game against the 49ers. And, that when you start a drive first and 15 – this is not the offense that's going to overcome that.
Just like with record, you want to win right off the bat. You get a penalty right away, you're digging a hole.
Yeah, and I mean, you're going to overcome that sometimes. But like, if you constantly are behind the chains, it's just setting yourself up for failure, especially when you're deep in your own territory, like they were to start that drive. So, no, penalties are an issue. But I actually thought throughout the course of that 49ers game, one of the things I was encouraged by was there weren't a ton of penalties, at least not on the first team offense. Like you didn't see holding, you didn't see. Whatever procedural stuff.
Yeah, right.
When you can play a clean game, your life gets a lot easier. When you can avoid turnovers, your life gets a lot easier, right? So, can you be that better coached team? Can you be that tighter team that doesn't make those silly mistakes?
And from game one to game two, you saw a definitely improvement right off the bat there.
Procedurally, yes, yeah. No question. And I think that's part of the reason you want to continue to get these young guys reps. Because, we haven't talked much about Talley Fuaga, right? Like, we haven't spent a lot of time talking about, okay, you have a rookie left tackle. That's going to be a concern. And it's because he's looked really solid. But, once you get into the games, I'm not sure. I feel like I know what to expect, but... that's a big step up from Oregon State, right? Suddenly you're playing the Panthers on on Sunday, and is he, how does he react to that? Are there going to be rookie mistakes? Is that going to be something that you have to watch throughout the course of the season? And we've spent all offseason looking at the other side of the line, and Trevor Penning, and what happens with there. We haven't really talked about it much today, but he's been splitting reps with Oli Udo in practice this week, first team reps. First time that's happened, and it's now become kind of a competitive situation. I still expect to see Trevor out there week one starting. I expect to see him out there with the ones today.
Right, it's still his to lose.
I think, yeah, but I think it's a sign that, hey, we are preparing for a scenario that if we have to take Trevor out, we have to do something else. We have that guy ready. So, you know, and part of the reason is, hey, you just can't get it done, right? You can't protect the quarterback without committing a penalty. You can't be trusted over there on an island. We have to constantly be sending help your way. And to be fair, Udo's not a slam dunk either at that spot, but he is a veteran who you probably have a little bit more confidence in to not be overwhelmed in that spot. And I think that's something that until the game start, you just don't know. You don't know how it's going to look. And so we'll have to see. But, yeah, if you can avoid penalties, if those guys can play clean, even if they get beat and some plays get blown up, like, I think you're in a much better spot.
I want to remind folks, the New Orleans Saints have partnered with Seaside Events to provide the New Orleans Saints Nation with the ultimate fan experience. You can mingle with Saints legends during the inaugural Saints Legends Fans Cruise. Make sure you check it out. We'll be back with more First Take that you can check out right here on WWL. Back here to wrap up First Take that's brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. Coming up, the Cajun Cannon on the countdown to kickoff. Right here, you want to stop by, be sure to check us out. We are Gate B atrium level. On the lowest level,
some
the
people in the building.
Yeah, so gates had to have opened at 11 o'clock.
Where they snuck in? One of those two things.
They've got the special secret media passes that we have.
Don't say that.
What's going to be fun too? You see all these additions to the Caesar Superdome. We mentioned it too. The host city this year for the Super Bowl. Obviously, exciting times. Got to be around for the Baltimore San Francisco one where the lights went out. But definitely looking forward to seeing how things shake out this year.
Had to bring that up.
Everybody equates that Super Bowl to what happened that year.
Well, I think, you know, we haven't talked much about it today. We talked about it a little at the open. Like, this renovation has been going on for, like, 4 years. Like, the people in this building have been working very, very hard to get this building ready to host the Super Bowl. And they, from what I can see, we didn't have time to go on the tour that the media took because we had to go and host Sports Talk after the practice on Friday. But from what I've seen, it looks fantastic. And they seem to have done a great job. Now, the streets outside... Well,
that's a different story.
We can't talk to...
not the Dome's fault.
I thought maybe they would have had the schedule. It seems like they took it as, the Super Bowl's in February. We'll have it done by February. We're not really worried about the season. But, you know, I think that this stadium looks great. They did a great job on it.
Like I said, coming up next on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network, the countdown, the kickoff with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Can't wait to hear his take on the preseason finale for Steve.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
We are back here on First Take, brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. And what do you know, Jeff? We are also stationed here on Gate B in the atrium.
A lot of
Caesars Rewards Lounge.
A lot of Caesars. It's a Caesars building, and they make you aware of it.
Looking at our Oakland Hard Jewelers talking text line, Jeff Zian from 1413 morning. I've been following the Saints since 1967. Good and bad, I have the Saints this year at 7 wins and 10 losses. The reason for this is because of penalties. Until the upper management of the Saints stop and do something about penalties, they'll never make the playoffs. I see 4 games they should have won to get them to 11-6 season, but they'll end up a 7-10 season. Joe from Biloxi. Well, I don't know if upper management's penalties. In charge of the penalty.
Yeah, that's a tough one to put on management. Yeah, because, like, how do you...
Coaching,
you
know, sure.
Yeah, coach, yeah, we could put that on the coaching all day. I'm just not sure what the upper management can do about penalties. But, I mean, penalties are an issue, right? That was one thing that, you know, the offensive line, Foster Moreau excluded, which he had a really funny quote that we can't play without some editing.
What's funny is, when we got to that audio, I'm like, do I have that clip and did I put the bleep in?
Yeah, right. I'm afraid to play it just in case this is the one I forgot to bleep.
Yes.
But, you know, he had a funny clip because, you know, that 95-yard touchdown drive, you know, it was really valuable for this offense, but it was especially for him because he's the one who jumped off sides on the first play of the game against the 49ers. And, you know, that when you start a drive first and 15, this is not the offense that's going to overcome that.
Just like with record, you want to win right off the bat. You get a penalty right away, you're digging a hole.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah, sure, you're going to overcome that sometimes, but, like, if you constantly are behind the chains, it's just setting yourself up for failure, especially when you're deep in your own territory like they were to start that drive. So, no, penalties are an issue, but I actually thought throughout the course of that 49ers game, one of the things I was encouraged by was there weren't a ton of penalties, at least not on the first team offense. Like, you didn't see holding, you didn't see, you know, whatever, procedural stuff.
Yeah, right.
Like, when you can play a clean game, your life gets a lot easier. When you can avoid turnovers, your life gets a lot easier, right? So, can you be that better coached team? Can you be that tighter team that doesn't make those silly mistakes?
And from game one to game two, you saw a definitely improvement right off the bat there.
Procedurally, yes, yeah. No question. And I think that's part of the reason you want to continue to get these young guys reps. Because, you know, we haven't talked much about Talley Fuaga, right? Like, we haven't spent a lot of time talking about, okay, you have a rookie left tackle. That's going to be a concern, and it's because he's looked really solid. But, you know, once you get into the games, I'm not sure. I feel like I know what to expect, but, you know, that's a big step up from Oregon State, right? Suddenly you're playing the Panthers on Sunday, and how does he react to that? Are there going to be rookie mistakes? Is that going to be something that you have to watch throughout the course of the season? And we've spent all offseason looking at the other side of the line. And Trevor Penning and what happens with there. We haven't really talked about it much today, but he's been splitting reps with Oli Udoh in practice this week, first team reps. First time that's happened, and it's now become kind of a competitive situation. I still expect to see Trevor out there week one starting. I expect to see him out there with the ones today.
Right, it's still his to lose.
I think it's a sign that, hey, we are preparing for a scenario that if we have to take Trevor out, we have to do something else. We have that guy ready. So, you know, and part of the reason is, hey, you just can't get it done, right? You can't protect the quarterback without committing a penalty. You can't be trusted over there on an island. We have to constantly be sending help your way. And to be fair, Udo's not a slam dunk either at that spot, but he is a veteran who you probably have a little bit more confidence in to not be overwhelmed in that spot. And I think that's something that until the game start, you just don't know. You don't know how it's going to look, and so we'll have to see. But, yeah, if you can avoid penalties, if those guys can play clean, even if they get beat and some plays get blown up, like, I think you're in a much better spot.
I want to remind folks, the New Orleans Saints have partnered with Seaside Events to provide the New Orleans Saints Nation with the ultimate fan experience. You can mingle with Saints legends during the inaugural Saints Legends Fans Cruise. Make sure you check it out. We'll be back with more First Take that you can check out right here on WWL. Back here to wrap up First Take that's brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. Coming up, the Cajun Cannon on the countdown to kickoff. Right here, you want to stop by, be sure to check us out. We are Gate B atrium level. On the lowest level,
some people in the building.
Yeah, so gates had to have opened at open. 11 o'clock.
Where they snuck in, one of those two things.
They've got the special secret media passes that we have.
Don't say that.
What's going to be fun, too, you see all these additions to the Caesar Superdome. We mentioned it, too, the host city this year for the Super Bowl. Obviously, exciting times. Got to be around for the Baltimore-San Francisco one where the lights went out. But definitely looking forward to seeing how things shake out this year.
Had to bring that up.
Everybody equates that Super Bowl to what happened that year.
Well, I think, you know, we haven't talked much about it today. We talked about it a little at the open. Like, this renovation has been going on for, like, 4 years. Like, the people in this building have been working very, very hard to get this building ready to host the Super Bowl. And they, from what I can see, we didn't have time to go on the tour that the media took because we had to go and host Sports Talk after the practice on Friday. But from what I've seen, it looks fantastic. And they seem to have done a great job. Now, the streets outside... Well,
that's a different story.
We can't talk to...
That's not the Dome's fault.
I thought maybe they would have had the schedule. It seems like they took it as, the Super Bowl's in February. We'll have it done by February. We're not really worried about the season. But, you know, I think that this stadium looks great. They did a great job on it.
Like I said, coming up next on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network, the countdown, the kickoff with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Can't wait to hear his take on the preseason finale for Steve. Back here to wrap up First Take that's brought to you by Harrah's New Orleans, a Caesars Rewards destination. Coming up, the Cajun Cannon on the countdown, the kickoff. Right here, you want to stop by, be sure to check us out. We are Gate B atrium level. on the Lowe's level.
Some
in the
people
atrium.
In the building.
Yeah, so gates had to have opened at open. 11 o'clock.
Or they sure. snuck in, one of those two things.
They've got the special secret media passes that we have.
No, yeah, that, no, don't say that.
What's going to be fun, too, you see all these additions to the Caesar Superdome. We mentioned it too, the host city this year for the Super Bowl. Obviously, exciting times. Got to be around for the Baltimore-San Francisco one where the lights went out. But definitely looking forward to seeing how things shake out this year.
Had to bring that up.
It's so, I mean, everybody equates that Super Bowl to what happened that year.
Well, I think, you know, we haven't talked much about it today. We talked about it a little at the open. Like, this renovation has been going on for like 4 years. Like, the people in this building have been working very, very hard to get this building ready to host the Super Bowl. And they, from what I can see, I haven't got, yeah, I wasn't, we didn't have time to go on the tour that the media took because we had to go and host Sports Talk after the practice on Friday. But from what I've seen, it looks fantastic. And they seem to have done a great job. Now, the streets outside,
that's a different story.
We can't talk to,
that's,
you know,
not the Dome's fault.
I thought maybe they would have had the schedule. It seems like they took it as, oh, the Super Bowl's in February. We'll have it done by February. We're not really worried about the season. But, you know, I think that this stadium looks great. They did a great job on it.
Like I said, coming up next on the New Orleans Saints Radio Network, the countdown, the kickoff with the Cajun Cannon, Bobby Hebert. Can't wait to hear his take on the preseason finale for Steve.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.